Content warning, in a first for the 2 hour podcast, this episode does contain some adult language, so listener discretion is advised.
Welcome back to this week's episode of the 2 hour podcast, and today we are joined by certified canine behaviourist Nancy Creedon. You may have seen her on the Dog Academy earlier this year on Channel 4. She has also been featured on Cats and Dogs at War on Channel 5 in 2021. She has a primary degree in zoology from University College Cork, a master's degree in animal behaviour and welfare from Newcastle University. She opened Creedon's Doggy Daycare in 2010, became a certified trainer in 2012, a certified behaviourist in 2013. She opened Creedon's College in 2013 and has been teaching students to become dog trainers ever since. Published research on dog bites in peer-reviewed Irish Veterinary Journal in 2017. She also has online courses available that I highly recommend that you check out, especially understanding pet dogs. She also has a free webinar on her YouTube channel, Nancy Creedon Dog Behaviourist, which is well worth watching if you want to get some more ideas on how you can provide enrichment for your little chihuahua friends. And you can check out her website, www.nancycreedon.co.uk. We had a great chat with Nancy, and I hope that you enjoy this episode. So on with the podcast.
Are you crazy about chihuahuas? Maybe you're wondering if a chihuahua is the right dog for you. Perhaps you have a training or behavior struggle? Well, look no further. Here you will find expert opinions, honest views, training and behavior advice, and much more on the Chihuahua Podcast. And now, allow me to welcome your hosts, Kate Masterton and Haley Miles. Over to you, ladies.
Okay, well, Nancy, we are delighted to have you on the Chihuahua Podcast. Thank you so much for coming on. We're really, really happy that you're here.
Thank you for having me.
Can I just ask you, the first question I want to ask you is, what are your thoughts on dog training programs on TV currently?
I thought the first thing you ask me is, what do you think about chihuahuas?
Oh, well, yeah.
And that.
And chihuahuas, yes.
Teeny tiny TV programs. I don't know. It's hard because, you know, this is going to be the worst answer you've ever had on your podcast, but I don't really watch dog training TV shows.
Even though you've been on them.
Well, because I think when I started my career, I'd watch everything that was on telly with dogs and dog training and all that. And like many people listening back then, I just believed everything I saw. I don't think I ever watched Caesar Milan from an educational point of view, but I definitely would have watched Victoria Stillwell's earlier stuff, and then the later stuff, and then your Rolf Harris stuff back in the day. And
oh gosh, that's going back a bit.
When Paul O'Grady passed away, I was doing an interview and they asked me if I watched Paul O'Grady growing up. I was like, no, I watched Rolf Harris. But yeah, so when it came to like TV shows back then, it was entertainment, whereas now it's frustrating. It's too frustrating to watch modern TV shows. Unless I'm on it, of course, I'll watch those ones just about, but they're a little bit from behind a cushion as well. There's too many quote unquote experts out there that are getting airtime that are entertainment people. They're not dog people, you know? And the thing is, yeah. I think that people in the dog world, and you guys know the same, is that there's entertaining people in the dog world. I think modern TV is starting to change a little bit insofar as they are trying to go with the right angle. But still, time and time again, we see the same kind of sensationalist TV and social media personalities getting the following. So I can't blame the TV. And I don't like when people say, oh, TV shows are always picking the wrong trainers. It's like, well, people are watching it. So the TV will put on what people watch. So modern TV training shows, hit and miss, two extremes, I guess, depends on the quality of what the producers are looking for.
Yeah. It seems to be two types of shows, isn't it?
Yeah.
The heavily sort of dramatized shows and then more educational ones. And
it's tricky because with the educational ones, you still have to make it entertaining. Like, I remember one of the shows I filmed before, the whole thing was, all we said all day, every day was Jeopardy, 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 more Jeopardy. And you can only make so much Jeopardy out of a dog that you're trying to introduce to a new food or something like that. So it's the audience. I'm blaming the audience. Sorry, audience, but I'm blaming you guys because they'll give you what you want. And whatever the numbers or whatever shows are getting the numbers will be recommissioned. It's plain and simple as that. So our job, I guess, those of us in the industry, is to keep educating the public of what they're looking at And it's funny because I have friends that are massive dog lovers that are normal people, and they'll follow trainers that obviously in the industry we know are basically abusive. And when I educate them or open their eyes to what's going on, they're shocked. And to me, it's baffling because I'm looking at this normal human being who adores his dog, would never dream of slapping him or anything like that. And he'll look at trainers and think that's, I guess, they're the experts, quote unquote experts, so they must be correct. And it's like, well, no, you're looking after your dog far better than these trainers would tell you to. So it's down to the general public to change what they're looking for, I think, a little bit.
I think if you've got a trainer on TV, you automatically assume they're like top of their game. Yeah. They're an expert. You're going to listen to them, aren't you?
100%. We all do. And I mean, I would have done so back in the day. I remember when I was I got a puppy when I was 18, and I put all the instructions on the fridge of what we're meant to do. And it's all like, say no in a deep tone and stare at the dog and all this silly stuff, because that's what the experts told us to do. And chances are, advice I would have given to clients, say, 10 years ago will be quite different to the advice I'm giving today. So what I say to people as well, if you're watching things, I know it's a little bit different for TV, but any source of information, obviously looking at the credibility of the person presenting it, but also when was it filmed? Because that will make a big difference, you know? Films.
Oh, that's huge.
10 years ago, totally different to today, most of them. So it's a minefield, and that's why you just feel sorry for dog owners, don't you? Because they're expected to be experts when the experts are still trying to become more expert in what they're experts on.
Yeah, it is a minefield, isn't it? Because you've got some people say one thing, other people say another thing. And like you said, Hayley, people say, oh, well, they're on TV, so they must be an expert, when we all know that that's not the case.
Not the case at all, at all. And what happens these days, you will find a lot more production companies are going directly to the bodies that are overseeing kind of certified behaviors and so on. So that is nice, but it's whether or not people are watching that. And like myself and Chirag filmed a show a few years ago, Cats and Dogs at War, for Channel 5. And like, without blowing my own trumpet, we made a good show. It was a really good show. I enjoyed it.
It was really good.
Yeah, we were witty. Yep. We got like good chemistry between us. We like had the right method and the right techniques. Nobody watched it. Now, episode one did go out against Oprah's interview with Prince Harry and Meghan. Well, nobody's going to be watching this. And then episode two went out against the Europa League final. So again, everyone was watching the football. So we had a tough time with that. But again, like there just wasn't any pickup from the general public. So if the production companies and the TV channels can only do their bit in trying to source accredited trainers and behaviorists and so on, but it's down to people to watch them. And again, it seems to be a lot more about watching characters than watching dog training shows, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And I think part of the problem for that is because good dog training is not very exciting to watch, is it?
It's quite boring at times, to be honest with you.
Yeah. It's so boring.
Not boring for us. Not boring for us.
Well, it's because we've seen it before, do you know? Like with Cats and Dogs at War, we had a tough time because we had eight families, all with a cat and a dog that didn't get on. So we had to make eight different like stories out of one behavior challenge. And it was just like, and the bit that is, you end up making a show that focuses on just one small element because that's what's unique to this case. So then clients or dog owners and cat owners watching the show will then think, well, that's just like, that's not going to work because our pets have so many different issues going on that you have to tackle everything. And then TV will only show you a small element. So while obviously our methods are humane and effective, it's not really ever going to give people the full picture. And then you'll have people in the dog industry or people who are like fanatic about dogs or people work in rescue and so on. And they're constantly commenting on the TV shows, oh, there wasn't enough of the training. And I'm like, but the training is boring for the general public who want to be entertained. Do you know, people are sitting there with the kids or, you know, having a cup of tea and want to watch telly. They don't want to watch a webinar on how to desensitize a dog. Do you know what I mean? They want to see the family's information. They want to see the drama between, you know, the husband and wife and so on. So it's funny because it's like making a cooking show, but the show is not about cooking. And then you get people giving it because it didn't show how much sugar and how much salt went into that bowl. Like, nobody's happy.
I know, it's a common thing, isn't it? It's hard because, you know, when you're doing, I don't want to get too sciencey here, but when you're sort of helping a dog, like you say, Nancy, desensitize, or you're doing counter conditioning, It's so like we work in such incremental small steps, like baby steps, to keep the dog kind of under threshold. It's working. We can see that it's working and things are happening, but it's really not that entertaining, as it were.
No, it really isn't. And even with a lot of production companies, they want to get at least some footage of the dog, I guess, somewhat at its worst. But for us who are working with the dogs, we know if we put a dog in a situation that they're going to be completely over threshold and you're going to get the response that the TV people want, that dog's not workable then. We need to give that dog, you know, a day off or a couple of days rest before we go back to the screen. So they're trying to get us to, like, well, to be fair, most production companies are pretty good with when we say, no, let's not go with the dog. They're like, okay, fine, no worries. And they step back. But then we're not getting the footage. And it is the footage. Like, I mean, I remember growing up and watching TV, and even with It's Me or the Dog with Victoria Stilwell and stuff, you will see the savage dogs at the front door trying to break through the glass before she comes in and does her work. On Cats and Dogs, or on the Dog Academy that we just did on Channel 4, with many of the cases, we didn't have any raw, ugly, dramatic footage. You know, we still, I consider it still good TV. I think we still had a very nice, warm, kind of like almost like a synopsis of what happens when you go to see a trainer. But the big issue with Channel 4 was there's not enough sensationalism. There's not enough of the pre-dog behavior compared to post. So it is, it's on paper, it doesn't work. Making TV shows about dog training doesn't really work, because we're not, if it's a dog training show, we should be showing the training. If it's a TV show, we should be entertaining. And it's a bit of a mush there, unless you're using punishment-based training methods, which are more dramatic and are more instant and are more shocking. And for some, for most, to be honest, entertaining to watch. So it's tough.
But on the Dog Academy, on the Cats and Dogs, was it Cats and Dogs? Did you have them send in like home videos to show them what the previous, what the behaviour is like at home?
We watched the footage there. So we'd go to meet the family, and then we'd be given a tablet to sit down with the family and look at some of the before footage. Right. So they did get a little bit more of that. And they, again, the owners recorded that and submitted that. So it's not a case of production company went in and riled up the dog to try and get some footage. It's a case of, look, these dogs are doing these behaviors regularly. Can you get it on footage for us? And then we watched that. So we did definitely see the before on Cats and Dogs at one. We did, one of them was quite bad. One of them, in the before footage, the dog actually catches the cat and does get a bite to the cat as well. Again, the production company can hold their hands up because they weren't there. This is what the owners consented to film and so on. But again, it just depends on the person's ability to get decent footage as well. Because again, we asked for it on the Dog Academy as well. They did ask for before footage from the clients, but some of it was upside down and sideways.
I have the same problem sometimes when I want some safe, to, you know, safely filmed footage of this and that. And yeah, sometimes it's a little bit kind of crazy.
We need to make explainer videos, I think, for them.
Yes.
From what you've just said, should the general public be watching TV, dog training TV programs more as entertainment rather than watching them and then copying what they see on TV?
That is such a tricky question, isn't it? Such a tricky question. Do you know what would be lovely, and it would never, ever, ever happen, is that you'd have the little disclaimers of this bit you can try at home, and this bit there was far more to it. I think that if the general public understand that there's a hell of a lot more went into what was going on behind the scenes, I do think that there's a lot of takeaways that they can take from good TV shows, and things that they can try with their dogs at home, whether it's enrichment or avoiding putting them into certain situations, or listening to the dog and observing the dog's behavior and so on. They can, but the problem is, unless you sit down with someone and say, for Fifi, we are going to do this, I think people struggle to attach the information to what they're facing at home. So I do think that if we had to have a blanket statement, just watch it as entertainment, that's probably the right angle to go with, especially because TV shows are hit and miss, but then dog trainers and dog behaviorists are hit and miss. And it's just, it's the struggle is the general public don't know how to critically analyze the information they've been given. And while it's off topic, really, in my opinion, the only way to change the dog world is to introduce these mandatory theory tests and had to have a dog license. And if you want to own a dog similar to a car, you need to be have the most basic level of foundation knowledge of how dogs work, how dogs learn, how dogs should be trained, why they should be trained these ways, and bring everyone to the same level. And whether or not they follow through on the information they learn on the theory test, on the information for the theory test or not, is irrelevant if we blanket every single dog owner with foundation information. The majority will pick it up and the majority will take it as information. Same as having babies. You know, if there was just general, generic, this is what you need to learn about bathing a baby, changing a nappy, all that stuff, you'd have everyone at least on the same level of understanding that that's ethical and humane. That stuff I used to do with my dog when I was a kid 20 years ago is no longer done. Okay, now we're all singing off the same hymn sheet. And then when your dogs run into problems or you have training issues, you then can go and get a professional. But you'll know when you go to get the professional and they say, okay, I'm going to bring in six big dogs to show your little dog to stop barking at dogs. You'll know from the foundation knowledge that you have that that's called flooding and we're not going to do that today. And that's the best way, I think, never mind regulating the industry, because that's no good. It's the people who use these people need to have the ability to critically analyze, I think. And then that goes back to the TV shows. So at least if they know that's not right, they'd be more likely to change the channel. And then when you change the channel, that's how you change the TV world when it comes to dog training.
God, yeah, absolutely. And Kate and I have discussed the theory test in quotation marks for dog ownership quite a few times, haven't we?
Yeah.
I think I was asked to go to speak to the Irish government back in February about dog bites. We have had three or four fatalities in Ireland, only in the last couple of years. There's none other on record over in the past. So I was asked to go and speak to the Irish government about what should be done and what should be implemented. And my thing is two things, is the introduction of the mandatory theory test, because we still have dog licenses in Ireland. So it'd be quite easy to almost just mimic the theory test for the provisional driving license, use the same centres, use the same computers, just click on a different box. And then my other suggestion was having a dog safety organization or a dog bite prevention organization, where in each county you've got one member of the organization who's there then to do education in schools, to investigate reports of aggressive dogs, to investigate the details of incidences of serious dog bites and fatalities, to assist the police with these kind of investigations, to gather the data and then to feed the data back into one annual report where we get a good clear picture from dog behavior experts of what their interpretation of the situation was, what the dog's history was, what training methods were used, what food the dog was on, the dog's medical history, everything down to every element of what happened to lead to the incident, and then feed that data back to put decent legislation in place. And obviously in the UK, if there's no dog licenses at the minute, it's a little bit harder to say now you need a license and you need to do a test. But responsible dog owners won't mind. I don't think they'd mind. And it's the only real way, because you can update the material on the content for the theory test every year, every couple of years. And again, it's just getting the information to the masses. Everyone knows that if your indicator isn't working, you put your hand out the window and you do the same thing. We never use that information, but it's there because we had to study it. And I want the same to happen then in the dog world. I think it's just a quick fix. It's not a quick fix, but once it's in, it will be a quick fix.
It's, you know what? It is really a no-brainer. I think it's a no-brainer. Focusing on the ownership rather than, you know, the dog guardians or the owners rather than regulating everything. Because then the, the channel hopping will kind of sort all this TV, the TV dog trainers out. I think the ones that they shouldn't be watching. It's knowledge. Knowledge is power.
Knowledge is power, absolutely. But also charisma seems to be more powerful.
And it's just
the fact that you get so many people worshipping these people that are using methods that if they tried to do to my dog, they'd get themselves in big trouble. You know, it's like we know it's wrong. We had one episode of Cats and Dogs at War, and it was a beautiful big German Shepherd. There was two German Shepherds in the family, and the adolescent one and the cat. The adolescent one had a great time chasing the cat every time he came downstairs. Cat then obviously was afraid to come downstairs. So one of the exercises that I was working on with the dog is teaching the dog leave it. So it was very simple. It was basically the instant the dog takes his attention off whatever the object is, We give the verbal cue, leave it. So there's forming an association between the instant I moved my head away from looking at the human dancing, I heard leave it and I got reward. And we repeated that and then basically put it on request that when the dog looks at something, we can then request them to leave it. They know that takes their focus off the thing and they get rewarded. Or cats and dogs at war was back to back with dogs behaving badly. Directly after we did this leave it training with our German Shepherd, he had I think it was a bearded collie that loved playing with the ball, which is a lovely thing that the dog does, but was becoming a little bit ball obsessed. I don't know why the owner had such an issue with the dog loving to play with the ball. So what they did was every time the ball bounced, the dog was choked. And the ball is bounced again and the dog is choked. And eventually by the end of the episode, the dog is so petrified of the ball that he is like hypervigilant, scanning where the ball is and looking away, scanning where the ball is and looking away, cowering over to his owner, because the dog has learned that every time I focus on the ball, I get choked, as opposed to learning that every time I look away from the ball, I get good things to happen. And the fact that the episodes were back to back, you know that there's a number of viewers watching the two shows, and it's baffling to think that that's even legal for him to put it. If this was 99.11 and we had one kid that was obsessed with the cookie jar, and every time that he walked away from the cookie jar, he was told he was a good boy and he got a piece of Lego, versus the child that got a slap every time it looked at the cookie jar. It was just like, you'd never put it out on TV. And there's nothing mythical about dogs. They're just like us. Like, I'm constantly telling people, emotionally and cognitively, a dog is very much like a three-year-old child. So if you wouldn't do it to a three-year-old child, you shouldn't do it to a dog. They're not indoor wolves. They're not these magical, hierarchy-driven, like, beasts that are trying to dominate the world and you must put them in their place. And 99% of dog owners know that. They know that their dogs are sweet family members that just want to love and be loved. So for it to still be okay to think that just because the dog wants to play with the ball, which is such a normal, natural, doggy, joyful thing to do, he's now getting choked every time he looks at the ball. And people are watching this and it's not going to like Ofcom or something like that. It's just so baffling and bizarre. And I was doing some videos for social media recently, and that one's always stuck in my head because that was one of the few ones I watched, and because it was back to back with what we had done for Leave It. And I just watched the clip again on YouTube, and it was just so hard to watch, because just a big, beautiful dog, his mum is totally okay with carrying out these training methods, and his the poor dog is just looking to his mom for like support and care and guidance, because this weirdo is choking him and like acting like an absolute idiot. And then the dog doesn't get anything from it. The dog doesn't get cared for. The dog is basically alone in its trauma, and there's no one there to comfort it, you know? And that will very much lead to much more serious behavior problems within days and weeks. Very much will, 100%. The dog is now going to, you know, snap at ankles when there's a football around, or the owner tries to put the slip lead back on the dog and then gets nipped and things like that. It's like, it's step by step how these outdated and unfair training methods lead to much more significant behavior problems. It's so straightforward to most of us that understand how dogs are learning, that to think that people still think, okay, that's me, job done, head off home, that dog now leaves the football, I'm an excellent dog trainer. It's just, come on.
Yeah.
It drives me mad.
Yeah, it's really frustrating. And I'm sure that a lot of us trainers will be just, we just scream at the TV.
Yeah.
We just shout and scream at the TV and go, what are you doing? My next question is, you know, this is the same kind of thing, but what are the dangers or potential fallout from following some of this dog training information and methods on TV? I think you kind of just answered that.
I think that when people are watching TV shows, it's 30 minutes or it's actually probably 22 minutes or like 47 minutes. And it's a quick, it looks like it's a quick fix. No matter how much on TV shows we kind of say, look, there's a lot more went into this, or we were working with the vet or whatever it is, you're watching a very short show. And really, when you take out the content of people speaking to cameras and interviews and all that kind of stuff, you're really just seeing a couple of minutes of training. And if that couple of minutes is a trainer who's using methods that are going to intimidate the dog or hurt the dog or frighten the dog or damage the dog's relationship with people, then if you go off and do what you saw over 3 or 4 or 5 minutes in a TV show and practice it on your own dog, one, you don't know the background of what's gone on with the dog that you're watching. So you don't know why that is the training method used for that dog. But two, if you're following methods that are going to damage the relationship between you and your dog without the background of even knowing where that case has been and where that case is going. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. And it's going to damage the relationship with your dog. And it's also going to possibly, I think quite often, like break people's trust in dog trainers and experts. Like you get a lot of people that say, oh, I used a trainer before, it didn't work, so that was it, never again. Or I tried what I saw on YouTube or on a TV show or on social media and it didn't work, so that means my dog isn't fixable or isn't trainable. And it's like, we're not all the same. One dog trainer to another dog trainer to the next one are all going to be totally different. Again, when it comes to behaviorists, I'm working with a case at the minute with a dog, and I'm the fifth trainer / behaviorist that they've worked with. The last one was a veterinary behaviorist, and before that it was a very famous social media channel trainer. Basically, it's a very anxious dog, locked up for 3 years, a lot of stereotypical behaviors, a lot of anxiety, a lot of basically, the dog never developed properly. And the dog is very, very reactive, as well as obsessively licking floors and eating floors and all this stuff. And then they were told to be more exciting. Be more. And it's like, this dog does not need any more excitement. They went to another trainer who said every time he barks, they'd bang pots and pans over her head. The other trainer was okay. Again, another controversial trainer. They've got two controversial trainers, plus a veterinary behaviorist that did very, very little. The information was very, very poor. So I'm the fifth. And I'm like, and I'm doing this pro bono because we're doing like a social media thing where I want to try and make content out of it. I picked a very difficult case. I picked a far too difficult case. But the point is, she's already paid a lot of money and gone to a lot of experts, quote unquote experts, for advice to fix her dog. And not one of the people they've gone to see have addressed what's going on with this dog. And it's far more neurological than behavior at all. Like, behavior is minimal in what's going on with this dog. And she had lost her, I guess, her momentum of following advice because she'd been given so much poor advice. And she knew better than to the pots and pans, and also obviously to choke on a slip lead when the dog is reactive on walks and stuff as well. She knew not to do this, and she didn't do it for long. She did it for a couple of days. Like, my heart goes out to her, because whether she watched advice on TV or pays expensive trainers to come to her house, she's not gotten value for money once, not once. And the dog is still very much suffering. So I don't know. I feel like, again, back to theory tests or back to regulating the industry or something, but it's like, it baffles me how many people will go out and take money off people when they don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah,
it really baffles me. It's embarrassing for them, I think. Don't do that, do you know?
Speaking of controversial people,
yeah,
but I know. Okay. I've seen your post on this.
Yeah, like, I'll say names. I'm like, you're not, it's not like it's,
oh, easy. Yeah, so yeah, social media now, that is even worse than I think what you see on TV, social media. There's been a huge controversy lately with the dog daddy, mm-hmm. and his methods. What are your thoughts on social media? I feel weird asking you this because I know what you think, but for our listeners,
I think that the thing with social media is there's a horrible element to human beings where we're drawn to watch others suffering. All of us, we're all guilty of it. I drove past a road traffic accident yesterday, and I was slowing down and trying to figure out what happened and what's going on. So when we have trainers, and I don't even want to call them trainers, when we have social media personalities attempting to train dogs, they're very good at making dramatic footage. And algorithms and whatever powers are behind social media seem to have an urge to bring out the dark. Yeah. Seems like videos of street fights and like even videos of murder and everything seems to be popping up on socials. And something's changed on social media as well recently, where it's not like you're just seeing pages you follow. They keep trying to push you and get you to watch things and look at things that are tragic, really, when it comes to just social media in general. And I'm forever Xing and closing and saying, don't show me this and all that kind of stuff. And I don't watch this stuff. Whereas my partner, he watches guys drunk fighting on the streets and stuff. And I'm like, stop watching this stuff. You're putting that energy out there. So when it comes to the dog training world, or videos of this is how to muzzle train your dog, and this is a game with a bucket and all this stuff, they don't go viral for two reasons. One, people don't find it entertaining because it's not sensationalist. And two, I believe that social media and whatever goes behind the algorithms aren't looking for that kind of footage. They don't want educational material to go out there and go viral. So when you look at the likes of the dog daddy is the worst. The dog daddy is disgusting. The dog daddy is someone that should very much be in prison for animal abuse. very much should have had his face bitten off by now. He will learn the repercussions of the methods he is using, because the little old lady who's trying his methods at home may get her face bitten off. And who's going to go to him for a lawsuit? Because he's making a hell of a lot of money, making crazy ass videos. He's Cesar Millan on acid, and he's just raking it in as this big bad celebrity. And while there's many, many pages and groups out there bashing him and educating people on why his information is dangerous and trying to shut him down, it seems to almost just feed the carnival of what he is and what he represents. And the problem is then people see that and think, oh, wow, I know how to make a good Facebook video. I know how to be sensationalist. I know how to make drama. And you've got your lower level, again, quote unquote, pseudo trainers who seem to watch other quick fix trainers and think, I can also do that, because we can all choke our dogs. We can all choke our dogs and they will stop doing what they were doing when we choked them. But exactly. We are risking ourselves getting bitten, or our dogs not trusting us, or our dog biting our child who tries to do the same methods and so on. So it's very easy for then you get your Southend dog trainer, and a reactive dog will choke it. A dog that wants to go, you know, a dog that, like one of his videos the other day was crate training, tire out your dog, put him in the crate, lock the door, he'll cry, he won't die, take him back out, put him back in, he'll cry again, it's not going to kill him, it is what it is. And then he ends with a disclaimer of, I have never seen a dog with behavior issues who was crate trained as a puppy. And anyone who works with dogs is like, that's so stupid. That's so stupid. That's like saying, give your dog a yellow fluffy toy and he'll never develop separation anxiety. It's like you're lying. You're lying. And what about the person who says, okay, I'm going to jam my dog into the crate and shut the door, and then when I do it tomorrow and he bites me, then where's the link there? Am I going to go back to him and say the information you gave me was dangerous and I'm missing my baby finger? Do you know? So when it comes to the dog daddies and Southend dog trainers and many, many others, I'm embarrassed for them, because there's so much information out there and they have so much access to courses and experts and people who will educate them where they can learn their craft and perfect their craft. And they're just fingers in the ears. I don't care. I'm rich. I'm making money. I'm famous. I'm getting what I wanted out of it. They are not in the industry to help dogs. They're in the industry to get more followers, more money, more books, and become celebrities, really. And like I said, I'm embarrassed for them, because you're in the wrong industry. There's many ways to be famous.
The backlash will drive their engagement up. So if we speak out about it, we're in helping them. But then we shouldn't not speak out about it either. No,
we have
it's to. Hard not to comment, isn't it? Let's face it, it's hard not to comment.
You know what? I am tired of, well, again, everyone has their own opinions. Everyone has their own ethics and morals and so on. But I don't believe that it's professional it's unprofessional to speak out. Like I've always learned on courses and webinars and things like that, that it's more professional to stay quiet and you know, take the high road. And I'm like, no. If I know a vet that's using really dodgy methods, or if I know a trainer that's going to harm your dog, I'm going to speak out. Because there's many people, like I said, there's friends of mine that I've spoken to them about these trainers and educated them, and they've totally changed their opinions. And I've had people commenting and messaging and saying, Jesus, I really like that guy, and now you've opened my mind and I see what you mean, and I won't be following him anymore. So we do need to speak out. We do need to educate people. And we can, like, I know this sounds terrible, but I was kind of going down the route of, let's get social media going a little bit more. So I was trying to get, you know, posting regularly and all that kind of stuff. And posts where you do, like, expose these people do go viral too. So you can use their methods and throw it back at them and be like, okay, let's get your sensationalist footage with my knowledge and let's mush it together and let's open eyes. Because it's the innocent dog owners who are stuck in the middle, who don't know what's what, that are, I guess, being catfished by these trainers. So when we can use their methods back at them and open their eyes and say, okay, would you really do that to your dog now that you know what's actually going on internally, and then change their opinions? That's, I think, that sits right with me. And I feel like it's something that can benefit. Just finding the time. I don't know how these people have the time to make all these videos. I know.
It's like, by the way, well, I really loved your breakdown, the breakdowns you've been doing.
I need to do more of them.
Unfortunately, I couldn't personally watch the whole of the Dog Daddy one, but I watched the Southend Dog Training one. That was brilliant. But I wish I could watch the Dog Daddy one, but I just know I'd probably get upset.
Yeah,
but I did love. Yeah.
Video, but yeah, it is. It's just, they're hard to watch, but they are, I think, a really good way of spelling it out to people. Because sometimes I think that people think in life, sometimes we just have to put up with the bad to get to the good. And it's sometimes in life, you know, you have to get up early and do whatever you need to do to get the results you wanted. So I think sometimes people look at these videos and think, yeah, it's horrible to watch, but that's the hard part that needs to get to the end result. So we need to educate them that that doesn't get you to the end result. And this boring method will get you to the end result. I have one on that crate training video that I was talking about a minute ago, and it's filmed and I have it. And I actually think I filmed it 3 times because I had different ideas, but it's just getting it edited and getting it out there is just like holding me back, but I need to do it because his thing is no bullshit dog training and my thing is no, that is bullshit. So I'm like,
we say they're talking bullshit with confidence, and bullshit with confidence
is the key to success.
Yeah.
Why didn't we all think of that years ago, eh?
I know, because that's what they've got in common, isn't it? Like Graham Hall, Southend.
Ego.
Bullshit with confidence.
Yeah, and it is, and it's swagger, and it's like, but that's why you'd just love to like be there when they're doing it and be like, actually, can I ask you a question? What about blah, 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 blah? And just watch them like get stuck in their words, because it's like, it's easy to use this kind of ego and charisma when it's someone who doesn't know any better. But if you try to preach that to like people who are educated in dogs and dog behavior, like surely they must get called out.
Embarrassing.
All the
They must do. They must get called out.
Yeah. And you know what? It's not, it's what the dog's telling you as well, because dogs do not lie with their body language. And I just wish there's just not enough body language, dog body language on TV.
That could be an interesting angle. One of the video that the Southend one that I did, it was only at the end of the clip that I noticed it. So it's not really featured in like in what I'm talking about, but the body language of the dog outside that's used as a training dog is, he will not look at the trainer. He will not look at him. And every time he's moving, he or she, every time the dog's moving away, there's a lot more relaxed body language, tail is up, the dog is anticipating, wants to get going. Every time he has to come back towards that man, he is so shut down and avoidance and head turns and everything, and it's just that footage, that body language was actually a lot harder to watch because you know that dog has seen a lot. And that's what, when, like, I did a podcast recently with someone whose dog is quite famous on Instagram, and obviously because her dog's now famous on Instagram, she's kind of in the industry a little bit more. And she was talking about a trainer that she had hired as well. And I was like, how did you choose your trainer? Because I never think to ask people, why did you call me? What made you decide to go with me as your behavior studio trainer than someone else? And she had said that what was super important for her was to see the behaviors that she hired, was to see her with her dogs. And she's got 4 or 5 Rottweilers. And I watched a video and they're all walking behind her. So I chose her. And I was like, oh, Jesus. Like, if anyone sees me with my dog, they'd never hire me ever again, because my dog is a dog. He's a happy dog. He's not afraid to walk in front of me. He's not like a robot dog. So when people are looking for dogs, we all grew up thinking that dogs, a good dog's an obedient dog that does everything it should do and walks beside you and, you know, doesn't cause any drama or any hassle and all that kind of stuff. Whereas now we know that's usually a dog that's been trained with punishment, and usually it's a dog that's afraid to try any goofy behaviors in case there's repercussion for it. So when I see people today thinking that that's how to judge a trainer's knowledge and ability, it was massively eye-opening, because it means I need to change how I train my dog, but how I set myself and why, like why people should choose me. So it's again on my to-do list, but I want to make like a little mini video about how to choose the right trainer and what you should be looking for rather than obedience, because I've never owned an obedient dog, I don't think. Nope. No, never fostered an obedient dog, never rescued an obedient dog. Never
obedient robotic dog, yeah.
Never, yeah. No. I mean, it would be lovely one of these days.
I was just going
to...
Anyway,
dogs just need to be happy. They need to be happy and live in our lives in a way that works for us. Yeah. And not...
And I was just thinking about what you were just saying about the dog daddy, going back to the dog daddy again, and that that famous video, or those famous videos of him walking through, was it New York, with those black German shepherds following him, 5 or 6, and they're all kind of following him, very, very low kind of body posture, and you're like...
And no one's even putting a nose past.
Everyone's impressed.
Yeah. Yep. But even because it was years ago that came out initially, wasn't it?
One of his first things.
Yeah. And it's like, for me, straight away, whenever I see anything like that, I'm like, ew. I know that sounds terrible, but I'm just like, no, don't do that.
Yeah, don't do that. My dogs are basically feral.
I love feral dogs. They're way more fun. I'm like, I'm feral, so my dog should be too.
That's what I think about.
I would say mine are spirited, let's put it that way.
Mine is my son. We've got a 3-year-old little boy. He's nearly 4. He'll be 4 in February, but he is just, he's hard work, but he's just like a boy and bouncy and like cheeky and like sticks his bum in your face all the time. And I feel like our dog is literally him. They're like such kids. Yeah. Like push boundaries, do goofy things, do silly things. They're just like, they're nuts, but I love them because like that's who they are. Do you know what I mean? They're completely themselves. And my dog is very like, we only got him in January, and he was 10 months when we got him. So we were like getting to know him and figure out who he is and stuff and his personality. And he's just like, he's just my son. And it's so funny because it's like, oh, now there's two of them.
That's funny. Yeah,
they want to be themselves. You want your dog to be themselves, not to be what you've created. Do you know? Same with our kids.
Yeah.
Do you know, I don't want my kid to be yes, sir, no, sir, 3 bags full, because that's not who my kid is. That's a learned behavior. I want to see natural behaviors.
Yeah. I want my dogs to be able to feel confident and to be able to express themselves. And that's what they do. You know, they're spirited. Yeah. There are a few boundaries and rules, but, you know, the majority of time they can kind of do what they like.
Yeah. What you want them to be dogs,
yeah. And like that's the thing with the whole bouncing the ball and choking the dog, it's like that's so cruel because that's taking away what has been his really special thing, his real enjoyment, and like especially being a collie breed, you know, it's like having that ball and chasing that ball around and herding that ball around was it was his thing, you know, and it was only that it annoyed the owner. And I made a video and I was like, this video is going to go so viral, and I made a video and nobody really liked it or shared it, but it was all about, before you get a dog, I really want to get a dog, I love dogs, love everything about dogs, you know, if I go on holidays I'm going to cross the road to go pet that dog, and I have a dog calendar, my handbag has a dog on it, I love everything about dogs, desperate, and we're all desperate when we're younger to go and get your own dog and all of my training methods, and I'll, you know, have my own special little dog baby. And then people get dogs and they're like, oh, he's doing dog stuff, I don't like this, stop barking, stop chasing. And it's bizarre because it's like, this is what we wanted, we got it, and now we're cross with it for being who we expected it to be, and we want to break its spirit and take away who he is so that it can become like an altered reality version of what we wanted in the first place. And it's just so bizarre when you think about it, because like 99% of people who get dogs are getting a dog because they're so excited and they want to have this new thing to love and to be part of their family and stuff. And then when we shut them down for being who they are, it's like being in a relationship with someone who keeps like telling you off for being what your personality is. Like, we've been watching a lot of Married at First Sight, and it's all about like, oh, I just want someone to love me for me, and when I express myself that they support me, and if I'm theatrical in a group that they're all for that and stuff. And that's all anyone wants, someone to love them for exactly who they are and not want to change them. And then we get these dogs and we're like, I thought I'd love you for who you are, but it turns out you shed. Let's do something about it. You know? So yeah, it is disappointing. And it happens to all of us. It happens to all of us that it's like, oh, I wish you'd stop doing that. Or Bear likes to take the kids' toys. And obviously that's our fault and management and all that kind of stuff. But like every time he takes them, it's like, well, that's our fault, we left it out. And he's very good for swapping and all that kind of stuff. Like, but we can't be mad at them for being what we wanted them to be. Do you know?
Yeah,
exactly. We've been talking a lot about this, haven't we, Kate? And I think last episode we recorded was very much about that.
Yeah, I feel like the gap between people with dogs and then people that understand dogs is so vast.
It's still true. It's two different like markets. World.
And it'd be nice to be able for that gap to close, and maybe having that theory test, you know, for dog ownership would help to close the gap.
I think the big gap is time, really, because like, so I teach students to become dog trainers, and I was saying to them when we were at our last classroom weekend, I was saying like, well, a lot of the content that we cover, and because they're just pet dog trainers, they're not doing any behavior work, they're not doing anything more complex, we cover all the basics of what you'd kind of cover in a group class and stuff. And I was saying to them that really, as your career develops, your bread and butter probably won't be basic obedience classes, because really a lot more people are going to nose work workshops or man trailing or, you know, things that are actually like intrinsic to who a dog is. And that is lovely. So there's I almost feel like I want to say it's almost like nearly 50-50. It's probably less than, probably about 30% of dog owners are now looking at their dog and saying, how can I make your life better? And then the other 70% are, we are getting a dog because we always had dogs and it fits into our family and stuff. So I think that the opening the eyes of those who want a well-trained dog to what that actually means and what their dogs actually need, I reckon very quickly they would say, oh yeah, that makes sense. Okay, let's do it that way instead. Do you know? And I think a lot of it is when I was younger, there would have been, I guess, a bit of shame on dogs that aren't well trained. And there also would have been like quite a bit of shame on rescuing dogs and on adopting dogs and stuff as well. And I feel like we now know, like, there's a lot more kudos to rescuing a dog these days. And when I was a kid, it was a cheap dog was a rescued dog, whereas a pedigree.
Yeah.
Whatever it is like the rich people have the pedigree dogs, whereas nowadays the rich people are going out and getting the most screwed up dog imported from some country, happily living on the streets of whatever country he was in. Now he's been ferried over here, and there's a lot more glory in rescuing dogs. But also, I feel like once the general public understand that it's cooler to like let your dog do dog things rather than sit down, stay, and there's less shame in having a dog that is goofy, then we'll all move on to the next stage of dog ownership, which is living together with a different species and ensuring that both of us get the best out of the relationship, really.
My next question was going to be, there's a good dog training and bad dog training on TV. How can viewers tell the difference? But I guess that comes down to the body language and the methods. Do you want to talk more about that?
I think when we look at good trainers and bad trainers and good methods and bad methods and outdated and modern and all that kind of stuff, I think for the general public and for people listening to podcasts and things like that, I think that what you need to think is, if what I'm looking at, if this scene, they replaced the dog with a child, mm-hmm. how would it make me feel? And that's my default. Would you do that to a child? And there's, I guess, educating people and opening their minds that actually there's nothing magical or hard or tough or more like iron shelled about a dog than there is about a 3-year-old. They're just as sensitive pain wise, emotionally, cognitively. Like they're looking at this situation thinking, why is this man hurting me? What have I done wrong? Why doesn't mom love me anymore? Almost down that route. And it's looking at it and saying, if they did that to a child, would it sit right with me? And the thing is with the body language, again, when we're looking at these funny YouTube videos of guilty dogs when I come home and the dog has ripped something up while I was out, and the dog's hiding in the corner and it's all avoidance body language and he's crouched over and he's trying to avoid any eye contact, and perhaps there's some trembling going on as well, and people share these videos and laugh at them and think, God, that's so funny. If that was a child standing in the corner trembling, afraid to look at the parent, you would be phoning someone to get some sort mm-hmm. of intervention here. So when it comes to body language, I don't want people to think that they have to go off and study dog body language, because really lip licking, head turning, yawning, shake offs, all the stress signals and all the signs that the dog's a bit uncomfortable that we see in dogs, we see in humans too. So you just need to look at that dog, ignore the hair and pretend it's a child with a big nose and think, is this okay? Does this sit right with me? And generally, when you're watching TV shows and it's a little bit more of a complex issue going on, are they dealing with the behavior that the dog is doing, or are they dealing with the emotion that the dog is feeling that's leading to the behavior? And any complex behavior issue that's going on, where the right angle is to focus on the emotion, focus on what's the dog feeling, focus on why the dog is doing that instead of stopping the behavior. So a kind of a takeaway message is as well, is think, what's the focus? What are they focusing on? Because if it's just the behavior, then they're not dealing with what's going on with the dog underneath. Even the dog chasing the bouncing ball, is that dog understimulated? Does he not have enough outlets for natural behaviors? Is that why he's become ball obsessed? Then that's what we should be focusing on, not on his response to the ball.
I love that comparison toward, you know, with a 3-year-old child in any situation. And I do that very often with clients and things, but I guess with TV programs especially, if that trainer is talking about how the dog's feeling more than what the behavior, like you said, what the behavior, stopping the behavior, that's a good sign, right?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah,
and opening the owner's eyes If they mention anything about pack or dominance or being top, just click off straight away. And let's have the TV channel see that every time the man mentions pack, we lose 10% of our viewers. That's a quick fix too. And do they have any decent qualifications? Because I know there's kind of controversy in the industry of education versus experience. I don't know anyone with a good education that doesn't also have experience. But there's a lot of people with a lot of experience that don't have education. So for me, I do think that formal qualifications and formal accreditation is vital, because for me, I did it because I wanted to make sure that what I thought was correct. I wanted to make sure that my skills and my knowledge were good enough, because I wanted to make sure I was giving people value for money. So when you've got pseudo experts that don't have any paperwork behind them, then they don't know if what they're doing is right either. So it's always number one for me is, have they got decent qualifications? And by decent qualifications is, go online, look at what they say they're certified in or they're qualified in, ask them, where did you get that qualification? Look it up, see who's teaching it. Is it being taught by someone without a name? Is it an AI created course that anyone can do for a tenner online? Or do they go off and spend, 6 months at some campus, in London, learning about their craft? Because you wouldn't go to a mechanic who said, well, yeah, I was tinkering with cars as a kid and I like doing it, so I'm still doing it. So definitely for me, qualifications are very, very important. Accreditation, make sure they're part of a regulated body, is really important too. Because again, I like to say to people that, like, your accrediting bodies and in the UK, so you've got your Animal Behaviour and Training Council, that's basically like FIFA. And that's basically an organization that's overseeing the football clubs in the league. So if you want to make sure that you're actually a professional football player, you need to be signed to a club, and you need to have passed your medical, and you need to pass your fitness test, and that club needs to be paying their taxes and have all their HR in place, and then that club needs to be part of a league. So when we're looking at trainers and behaviourists, anyone can say they're a professional football player, but really, are they getting paid by a club, or are they just out there kicking about in the field on a Saturday afternoon? And again, anyone can say they're a behaviourist, but have they passed their medical and been signed fit to do what they're saying they're competent at by a club that's actually part of a regulated body? So accreditation is important, qualifications are important, and again, would you do it to a child? If you wouldn't, then change the channel.
Absolutely, hit the nail on the head.
Brilliant. I can feel the passion.
Yes.
It is, though. It's just like, especially when it's just gone mad recently, hasn't it? Like, because we only had Cesar Millan to deal with before.
I know.
It's like we've gone backwards.
Cesar's lovely compared to these guys.
Yeah, he actually looks all right now, doesn't he, Cesar?
I was a big Cesar Millan fan. I was a big Cesar Millan fan. Yeah, back in the day.
Were you? Yeah, I never watched him.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever watched him. I must have had the channel or something. I used to watch Victoria, but I don't think I ever saw Cesar and like watch it until I got into the industry. And then I used to watch it for critically analysing him. But it's funny.
It was the charisma drew me in.
Yeah. And you see the end results and all that. So we can all completely understand why people are hoodwinked into it. It's just, I just feel like I feel sorry for people, because they're being ripped off, you know?
What changes would we like to see from trainers on social media and TV?
You know what? I feel like changes from trainers on social media and TV is not down to changing the trainers. It's down to changing social media and TV. Yeah. Luckily, in a lot of the... over the last couple of years, I've seen a lot of, and applied for a lot of TV shows where they are only looking for certified behaviorists and making sure that people are regulated and have the qualifications. You have to submit all that kind of stuff. So most TV channels and production companies seem to be on the right foot. And luckily, and I strongly believe that is because those of us in the industry and in the know-how have put pressure on them. I think that all the emails that are being sent to Channel 5 about dogs behaving badly, I think that has an impact. I think he's still making the money, so he's going to stay until he stops making the money. But the show that I did, also on Channel 5, they were adamant that we needed to be above board and have the right qualifications and so on. And then with social media, I don't understand how the likes of TikTok and Instagram and all that are allowing these videos on their platforms. So I think the campaigns shouldn't be about getting rid of the dog daddy, should be getting TikTok to start recognizing animal abuse and then taking it off the internet and so on, because that's the only real way to make changes, because we can't just get rid of the dog daddy because then there'll be someone else, you know? So I guess the bodies need to, the platforms need to take more responsibility there. I do think the TV thing is very much changing. I think the majority of TV shows besides Dogs Behaving Badly are at the minute presented by educated dog trainers, from what I can think of. And even like ITV had a show last year and Chirag was on it, and they're definitely going down the right angle. There's a new show coming out, I don't know who's going to be on it, with Alan Titchmarsh, so it'll be interesting to see what caliber of trainers they have. But luckily, I'm glad that behind the scenes, TV wise, they definitely do seem to be looking for the right people. So that'll help that. It's just viewers need to support the shows. Like even with the Dog Academy, we struggled with numbers a bit as well. And we need people to not only support it, but to watch it and to share it and to tweet about it. And like, even though it sounds silly, all these like tweets and messages over to Channel 4 and all that stuff, they get read. People see them. Mm. So the more activity that, like, for example, when Paul O'Grady's show was on versus the Dog Academy, like especially like with Twitter and so on, like it was going crazy for his shows, and then ours would get a couple of comments here and there. So people do need to put a bit of momentum behind it if they want to see more of these types of shows going out, and watching it then as well, of course. Watch it on, if you've got multiple TVs in the house, put it on every TV.
Put it on now. Put the Dog Academy on now.
Yeah. On loop.
And you know what? Sorry.
I was just going to say the Dog Academy was a refreshing change, I thought. It was really nice to see.
I loved it. Yeah.
Yeah, I loved it too, but it's just, again, numbers. It's just getting people to watch it because... we can only do so much. Like my thing, what I want to start doing as well is I want to start making like mini episodes for social media, like mini little 9-minute cases. And that way then I'd have full control of the content and making sure that like we're getting the right history and we go and see the vet on it and things like that as well. Because I think people's attention spans are quite short as well. But if we can mix the right level of kind of sensationalism with the right approaches and the right methods, then at least from an entertainment point of view, we're making sure that people are getting the right content. But I do definitely think that most people watch TV shows just to be entertained. It's 8 o'clock on a Thursday evening. You want to put your feet up. So we should just take it for what it is, a TV show meant to entertain the masses with dog training included and with the right dog training included. So more support for what it is. Like when I see comments of people saying they didn't go into the details of the methods or there's no details about the dog's, you know, medical checkup and all that stuff, just trust that that's all there. That's all there in the background. But right now we're trying to make TV. We're trying to entertain people. So if it means we have a lot more focus on the couple bickering than the dog doing its training, then that's fine. Just watch it and go with it. And then report the bad ones too.
Yes, I've reported so many videos on TikTok and stuff, and we need to do more of that as well.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. We need to be little nagging Nellies.
Yeah. Hey, do you have anything to add? We haven't actually asked you whether you like chihuahuas.
Yeah. How do you feel about dog
person? So I'm always a big dog person, big dogs that I can squeeze. But this little guy, Kevin. So when I used to, years ago, when I first opened my business, I was doing pet sitting as well. And Kevin was the most beautiful little chihuahua that was, he was a very nervous dog, but also very ballsy. And I had a lot of respect for his temperament and his personality. He used to sleep up on my pillow and stuff. And he only died recently. And like, obviously I've worked with so many dogs in my career, but that one really hit me for some reason. And I think he was just that. There's two little dogs. It's him and a little dachshund called Darcy. They're just like wiggled their way into my bed and into my heart and stuff. And I just like,
don't do that.
Yeah, but there was something about Kevin, obviously the big googly eyes just looking at you and stuff as well. Like, do you know what it is? Do you know what it is? He trusted me and he didn't trust a lot of people, and he, like, obviously because I'd be pet sitting him, and he came to my house for Christmas dinner, and he's playing with my niece when she was a toddler and stuff. Like there's something nice about being needed, isn't there? And I feel like some little dogs, when they're just that little bit more like, oh mommy, you're here to take care of me, it's very natural to want to nurture them and stuff as well. Whereas your big dogs, you're kind of like, hey, protect. The little ones. So there are definitely, and I do like the bravado that comes with our little dogs as well. You do have to respect that. I just am scared of them because if I squeeze them too much, I'll break them. And that's what I don't want to do, professionally and personally. Don't want to break them. So these teeny tiny dinkies, but no, they are super cute. And they're so much easier to just have a small dog at times than big dogs.
Yeah, a lot more practical in some ways. Yeah.
Mm, yeah. But still very loud.
Yeah.
So I think to finish it, we should direct people to your resources, because I've just actually watched your free webinar on enrichment. Oh, cool. Which I was like, well, that's a really good webinar. People should be watching this.
I liked that one. Yeah, I know. Because you always have these ideas of making things and then it's never you get around to it. So I'm glad I got that one out of the can.
Yeah,
when I was filming it with kids walking in and people walking in, I'm like, I'm doing my professional stuff now. Leave me alone. I just made a new website. So I actually ended up making the website myself. Ran into trouble with my web developer. So I was like, I can do this by myself. So at nancycreedon.co.uk, there's access to the online courses. There's access to free webinars. I also have a free course for pregnant people who are expecting a baby called Is Your Dog Expecting Your Baby? So I think that's a really important one, especially being a mom as well. It stresses me out so much when people think that, oh, my dog and my kid are going to be fine because my dog knows it's part of me. That's not the case. So nancycreedon.co.uk is my website, and then obviously the Facebook, TikTok, whatever, on Instagram, it's just Nancy Creedon Dog Behaviorist, I think. But I try to keep it active, and I will try to keep it more active, and I will try to point out the incorrect methods that are out there, and name and shame, because I've no qualms about doing that, and open people's eyes. The more eyes that are opened, the better the world will be.
I hope that you've enjoyed this episode with our special guest, Nancy Creedon. And as usual, please remember to like, follow, subscribe, tell your friends. You can write to us at thechihuahuapodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on Facebook, The Chihuahua Podcast, and we'll see you next time.